This is a podcast from Bloomsbury TNT Clark. To subscribe, visit us at Podomatic or iTunes, or check our blog.
I'm here with Katie Edwards, who is the director for the Sheffield Institute of Interdisciplinary Biblical Studies, and she's just edited a volume called Rethinking Biblical Literacy. Katie, I'm wondering if you could tell us what you think biblical literacy is and how do you define it?
Well, that's more of a complex question than you'd imagine, because it tends to be that people define biblical literacy in very particular ways. And so quite often the debate that seems to be happening is more about anxieties of the future of Christianity rather than one that's actually about literacies. And I think mainly that's because everybody's talking about completely different types of literacy. And even the idea of literacy is complex. There are multiple literacies. And so I think within biblical studies, we tend to reify the word, either capital W or small W. We tend to privilege that over any other kind of literacy and actually dismiss many other kinds of literacy. So if you're literate in popular culture, if you're literate in, if you're visually literate, if you're literate in images, then that seems to be dismissed in favour of written literacy, which is very out of sorts with other disciplines, academic disciplines. So what I'm looking to do is really try and complicate the idea of what the definition of biblical literacy is, so that there are lots of, we have lots of different types, lots of different perspectives. And I'm really not trying to say that anyone's wrong or anyone's right, but I'm just trying to say that this is a multiple, complex issue that we're looking at. We can't just say there's one type of literacy and everybody's got to hit that, because it's just not the case.
So with respect to the volume that we've just published, where do you locate biblical literacy? How do you describe that particular type of literacy?
Yeah, so I think within the volume, there are lots of different perspectives. There are some writers who are suggesting that actually there is no literacy in certain areas that you might expect there to be, and then other people who are saying there's much higher literacy than you'd expect in certain areas. Mm-hmm. So this is not a volume that's trying to put forward a particular view of literacy. So online, it seems to have the discussion seems to have been that we might be trying to suggest that biblical literacy is actually much higher than other people have suggested. That's not really the case at all. Again, it's just this idea of saying that there are lots of different type of literacies in different areas. So, for example, you can see that the Bible's used constantly in popular culture, and it really is used constantly in all different areas. So, for example, there's the Exodus Gods and Kings movie, there's been the Noah film, but these are kind of spikes of interest in popular culture that then lead to all these discussions about why is the Bible coming back? Why is everybody suddenly interested in the Bible? And really that's quite artificial, because there aren't these sudden spikes when everyone's suddenly interested in the Bible. The Bible is being used consistently throughout popular culture, always. So if you look at advertising, there are no times when suddenly the Bible's used. It's used throughout the year and it's used every year. If you open a women's glossy magazine, there will always be some Bible in that magazine. I've never opened one yet during the course of my research where I haven't found some quite explicit examples of the Bible. But again, the kind of recognition of the Bible in popular culture, or being able to understand that that is the Bible, or being able to identify the story, or being able to talk about it, is often seen as not real literacy, and that's not real Bible, as if this is somehow separated from the text. Mm-hmm. And that's something that that kind of binary between, you know, text and retelling is something that I'd like to just again break down slightly. And you can see, I mean, every year we get these discussions of biblical literacy again, twice a year normally, Easter, Christmas, you get a bit of a, you know, a few Daily Mail articles about Easter. It's normally some group doesn't have biblical literacy. At Christmas, there's no nativities. Every year we've got no nativities. And so we've just seen that last week. We had the press release about Net Mums saying that something like only a third or 30% or something of schools only did nativity. And actually, you know, there's been plenty of newspaper reports, particularly local news, who've been hitting back against that, saying, well, not in our area, they're all doing nativities. So they might be adding another layer onto the nativity. They might be introducing a new character, but the story, as it stands, is still there and kids still know about it.
Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a story that continues to be relevant. I mean, we did a volume last year with Bloomsbury called A Guinea Pig Nativity,
yeah,
which was the story of the nativity acted out by guinea pigs. And it was an adorable little book and became an absolute bestseller. And it was in Saga magazine and everything. don't laugh, it was. And that was interesting because it took that story and it was actually a very traditional presentation story. You say that in the book we're sort of looking at where biblical literacy is surprisingly found, where in some places it's higher than we would expect. And then, as we were talking about advertising, it's clear that there must be some base level of literacy. Otherwise, advertisers wouldn't spend tens of thousands of dollars on using biblical imagery to get their products across.
Yeah.
Why do you think advertisers do use biblical images? And what do you think that says about sort of maybe I'm putting it clumsily, a base level of literacy?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I want to mention there that you talked about. So, first of all, I think that advertisers use biblical images because for the very, very reason that they are recognised. And I think that speaks to exactly what you've just been saying about there being a base level. Now, again, when I give talks, people say, oh, no, because that's not people recognising the Bible. That's this kind of... We've got a selection of cultural images that we have and that we just bring out, and people don't really know where their origins are, but they just recognise them, and, you know, you get to know about them through some sort of cultural osmosis. I actually think that that's not really the case. I think that advertisers are much smarter... advertising companies are much smarter than people give them credit for. I think that often they really do know exactly what they're doing when they use biblical images. And they use them because if you think about, say, print advertising, where you're in a women's magazine, and you think about the way that you read a magazine, you just flick through the pages. So you've got less than a second, quite a lot less than a second, to make an impact and to get across everything. You've got to communicate everything from that image into the concepts that you want in the consumer's mind. Well, quite often you're going to resort to an image that they instantly recognise. They know the story around it. They know all the concepts the cultural concepts that are attached to that image. And you've got it. They've got what they're trying to sell. And Eve, for example, does that. Jesus, in many ways, does that, especially at the moment in... Well, it's not at the moment. Throughout popular culture, biblical images have been used to really... play with the really pressing social issues of the time. So to play with ideas about gender, to play with ideas about race and class. And so Jesus in particular is really often used to think about things about whiteness, about race, about how, you know, when somebody's white, race becomes kind of invisible. You don't really have a race when you're white. And to play with ideas around that whole idea. Richard Dyer's written really successfully on that, I think. And also ideas about masculinity. So we get a whole pattern of representation through contemporary sports advertising that's male-targeted. So not at all through female-targeted sports advertising, but particularly through... things like mainly football, really, but also boxing. Mm-hmm. So that's really why I think it's used, and I think it is about having a base level of biblical literacy. The thing about measuring that is, what are we measuring? Mm-hmm. Because when research is done, you have to have an agreement on what biblical literacy is to even be able to measure it. Mm-hmm. And that's before you even start thinking about the difficulties of measuring biblical literacy. So I go into schools loads, lots and lots to do, to talk about my research and to talk about biblical studies. And I have to build in about 10 minutes resistance time into teaching, because we all know what it's like when you go in and say that you do biblical studies. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to a party or something, probably if you want... to stay chatting with people, strangers. You're probably not going to admit to doing biblical studies initially. And it's the same with school. You go in and immediately there's this resistance from students where quite often they'll say, no, Bible's nothing to do with me. It's nothing. And really quite, sometimes quite angry and quite aggressive, because they seem to think in the first instance, and this certainly seems to be from the feedback that we've received, they think that in the first instance we're coming to evangelise, I think we're coming to, you know, try and convert them in some way, or try and, you know, teach them about Christianity. And once they've realised that that's not why I'm in the class, once they've realised that I'm speaking to them about things that are actually in their life, like advertising, stuff that they can talk about, stuff that impacts them, and the way that they see things, they actually know far, far more about the Bible and its stories than they'd let on in the first instance. Mm-hmm. So when you're measuring, you know, understanding or recognition or anything like that, you've got to build in 10 minutes resistance into talking particularly to young people who are not from faith backgrounds about the Bible. And there's this real assumption, and it doesn't seem to come from research necessarily, but there's this real assumption that young people, whatever age range that is, wherever they come from, whatever socioeconomic, geographical background that is, don't know their Bible. Mm-hmm. And again, how do you measure that? Because their response to you in a classroom, or their response to you when you're stopping them to ask them about a survey, or their response to you in a focus group, is not necessarily representative of their authentic understanding of the Bible or particular Bible stories. And it depends on how comfortable they feel, and it depends on where they stand, because sometimes their resistance to answering questions about the Bible can really be more of a kind of political stance, mm-hmm. on organised religion rather than talking about this book. So all that needs to be taken into account, I think.
And I suppose in terms of discussing biblical literacy, there is a sort of accepted idea of a type of biblical literacy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
We're talking about biblical literacy and trying to sort of generalise and trying to say sort of what biblical literacy might be, but there's this sort of idea of biblical literacy that is almost comes with an interpretation as well.
Yeah,
that you will
right.
know your Bible
yeah.
in this certain way,
yeah.
you'll know chapter and verse, you'll
yeah.
be able to say really who
yeah.
the characters are, exactly what they've done, exactly what's been said, and be able to almost sort of understand it within a particular theological framework.
Absolutely, no, I agree with that. And some of the biblical literacy research that's done and that is called upon will say, you know, biblical literacy is knowing this is the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a very, very clear position on exactly what biblical literacy is there.
Mm-hmm.
But then to use that, to kind of import that data and say that that's measuring biblical literacy is not quite right, because that's not really what that's trying to gauge or analyse or examine. So really that's why I was interested in doing the volume and trying to bring out more voices and more perspectives and not create a coherent, not try and offer a counter to that,
mm-hmm.
but just try and offer some different perspectives on what biblical literacy might be.
And to show some of the surprising areas in which the Bible bubbles up.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Like in The Simpsons, like in Family Guy and
yeah.
Izzard, we've got one of the chapters entitled A Big Room for Pooh, which is one of my favourite Izzard moments.
Yeah, and even in stand-up comedy, lots and lots of... Because that's another thing. So quite often the criticism is, oh, well, there are just these very few examples in popular culture. So there's almost a resistance to even acknowledging that it's there in popular culture as well. So
mm-hmm.
the idea is, oh, no, there's only one or two examples. There's only a few examples in popular culture. And we keep going over, keep bringing them out time and time again. Well, for example, Ed Izzard is a stand-up comedian that Chris Meredith's written on. But other stand-up comedians, loads of stand-up comedians have used the Bible
mm-hmm.
for skits and whole stand-up shows based on it. But just because an academic hasn't written on it, because this is a really underdeveloped area, doesn't mean that it's not out there in
mm.
popular culture. And often academics are not the greatest gauges of what's happening in popular culture either.
No, indeed. Let's not say too much on that. But comedy, it's interesting that we have comedy as well, because like advertising, comedy is a genre which requires an immediate response. Mm. You know, if you don't laugh at the joke, you're onto the next joke.
Yeah.
So if a comedian,
well, you bombed, yeah.
You know, a comedian can't spend 10 minutes sort of explaining what the joke is. They make the joke. They say it in a big room for poo, and everyone's there thinking of Noah, thinking of that big room, presumably for poo on top of the deck. And I mean, the same.
Oh,
could
you
be
could
said,
do a stand up on this.
The same, the same could be said of pop music. I mean,
and advertising. Advertising is exactly the same. If you don't get it, if you don't look at that image and get it, then that image is duff. It's not going to be used again. And so the very fact that these images are used time and time and time again is really witness to the fact that they work because people recognise them, because they get the joke. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It's the same principle.
And I mean, do you think this is? Do you think these images are relevant now because we're still sort of basically as a society that has had its origins in a sort of general sort of Christian environment? Do you think? Do you think that's the reason these images are still relevant, or do you think they're going to stay relevant for generations?
No, I think that. I think. All the stuff that came out in the 2011 KJV anniversary, all the kind of rhetoric around the King James Bible, that it was, you know, it forms a fabric of our culture and all that kind of thing, is exactly right. It does. And I've really got no anxiety about the Bible going anywhere. I don't worry about it, because there's a kind of dual concern going on. So on the one hand, there's like a celebration because the Bible's everywhere. We need to keep it. We need to keep it because it undergirds our culture. It undergirds, you know, you can't understand art, history, English literature without it. But on the same time, it undergirds it. And yet, oh my God, we're going to lose it. What we're going to do? We're in crisis. Well, if it is so integral to our culture, if it does undergird it, then I'm not really worried about it going anywhere, because it's staying put. It's there. And it continues to be there through popular culture. So, to me, that's something to study, not to dismiss. Because all the really important stuff about gender, you know, every time, like at the end of every century, whenever people are worried about, you know, economics, when they're worried about financial crashes, when they're worried about sexually transmitted diseases and gender and women becoming economically active or single mothers, they bring a biblical character out, and it's all worked out through them. So I'm not worried about it going anywhere at all. It's there to stay, and it's relevant as ever. It just depends on what particular position you're taking on where it should be, if you're finding the Bible in the places where you should find it. And I think a lot of the issues are around that.
So is it fair to say that you think that there is not really anxiety about how the Bible is known and whether the Bible is known and whether it's getting out there, but about whether it's being believed in a particular way?
Yeah, I think it's both, actually. I think one, there is a genuine concern, but I think it's really from quite a privileged position that's not recognising that, you know, the canon isn't the only way of knowing about the Bible. So it can be known and introduced through popular music. Look at Twilight. Nothing has sent young people back to the Bible as successfully as the Twilight phenomenon did, you know, but it's so easily dismissed, and yet it's been so successful and so effective in making young people interested and perhaps even reading the Bible for the very first time, just so that
and
they
perhaps
know
even coming to a perspective of faith. You never know.
It could well be, but I think it's the two. I don't think that necessarily people are pretending not, you know, they're pretending to be interested in biblical literature because they're worried about faith, but I think that the two things are running concurrently, and quite often the term biblical literacy is used when actually it is really about a particular faith perspective and a concern about the perpetuation of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and to finish up, how do people learn about the Bible in 2015? Do you think Do you think enough is done in schools? Do you think everything is good, it comes through popular culture and should come through popular culture?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to batter schools. Every year we get these reports on schools aren't doing enough, RE lessons, there's not enough Bible in them. 2013 we got a whole report about how RE teachers weren't biblically literate enough. We didn't worry about whether RE teachers are literate in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Quran. There was no reports on that. It was specifically about the Bible. So I think it's really easy to direct a lot of this anxiety and concern at schools. Actually, from my experience of working in schools, and granted this has been within South Yorkshire, there's a fair bit of Bibles done within schools. RE is in crisis, we know that. It's really under the cosh, but they're still interested in looking at the Bible critically and analytically. And so they bring people like me in to come and talk to students. So quite a bit is being done there, I think. I think a lot of it is through popular culture, actually. And I think that is a worry in itself for quite a lot of people, that they want people to read almost like a medical prescription. You know, they want to read. If you read some of these reports, like the Barna thing, it was, you know, how many people read the Bible, say, once a day, how many people read the Bible twice a day, as if it makes you more biblically literate the more times a day you read something. When actually, you know, you're seeing advertising and popular culture constantly around you. So, yeah, I think it's a mixture of both. I think schools are doing more than we give them credit for. And I think that popular culture is a huge source of biblical literacy, but also that students know more about it, and people know more about it than we think, and actually they're a lot more critical about popular culture than we think. They're way, way more savvy than we even give them credit for, I think.
I was talking to Katie Edwards about Rethinking Biblical Literacy, published by Bloomsbury T&T Clark in 2015 and available in paperback now. For more details, check our website www.bloomsbury.com or look for updates and details on our T&T Clark blog. Thank you for listening.